We're exploring the growth of soccer in the U.S. with former U.S. men's national team player and Golazo Network analyst Charlie Davies. Plus, we're taking a deeper look at the Coyotes' move to Utah, and the NBA's huge year is setting it up for some major paydays. It's Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. The Arizona Coyotes are leaving for Utah. Joining me now for a deeper look is Front Office Sports newsletter writer Eric Fisher. Welcome, Eric.
Hello.
So let's start with some basic stuff here. Are the Coyotes definitely moving to Utah?
I would say we're at 99.9% at the moment we're taping this. Everything appears to be in place, and it looks like perhaps even as soon as Wednesday, we'll get official word on this, but that's where we're at.
And why was Ryan Smith, owner of the Utah Jazz, able to swoop in here and get the team?
Basically, we had a situation where the Coyotes' interim stay at the Mullet Arena, which is the 5,000-seat venue at Arizona State, this was supposed to be a temporary situation, but as the Coyotes have continued to have issues getting a new stadium in Arizona in the Phoenix area built, what was looked to be originally a year, two, maybe three, was now looking at five, and maybe even what's going to happen after that. And that extended runway in what is not really an NHL-sized, and certainly not NHL-sized and not NHL-caliber facility, really just kind of brought the situation to a head.
Yeah, and Smith had done some prep work, obviously, to
right. He's been working late relationships for a couple of years now.
Right. And of course he's got an arena ready to go, where the Jazz play in the Delta Center. So yeah, he kind of had all the pieces in place because, you know, usually he's not getting an expansion team, but anytime you get an NHL team and you're moving a professional team like that, often there's a bidding process with multiple cities involved. It kind of felt like Smith got to jump the line here.
Yes, but again, this is such a unique situation that was what was supposed to be a pretty straightforward, okay, they're going to be at Mullet while a new arena is built, turned out to be not straightforward at all. That kicked out of Glendale, turned down in Tempe, and now this potential land auction that the Coyotes are looking at in North Phoenix near the Scottsdale border, that's running into its own issues. And so you just literally had one municipality after another across the valley there either saying no outright to the Coyotes or at least expressing serious questions. And again, this situation brought it to a head where the league just, for the sake of the team and sake of competitive balance and everything else, needed to make a move here.
Yeah, and let's get into that land that, you know, Coyotes owner for now, Alex Marullo, is still bidding on. So first, he has this very unique arrangement with the NHL. In order to get the sale to go through, he essentially has first dibs on an expansion team back in the Phoenix area.
Yeah, and it really sort of just kind of closes the circle that if he does in fact win this land auction and is able to get an arena, of course the league would like to be back in the number 11 media market. He's got to be able to prove that he can do that. But once he can do that, what this deal has done is sort of lay out a framework and a process by which that can happen. And I think it's really, given the problematic nature of the situation and how something needed to happen now, I think it's really about as fair as could be constructed for all parties involved.
Yeah, and specifically with that land he's bidding on, is it in Phoenix itself or the Phoenix area?
Yes, it is in Phoenix proper, but again, close to Scottsdale.
Yeah, and what's the situation there?
The situation there is you've got a lot of traffic and infrastructure issues there. It's on some undeveloped land, but near some other populated areas. So how traffic's going to flow, where you're going to bring water and sewer lines in from, there's a lot of sort of detail issues there as to how it's all going to work. And then there's just the cost and scale of the thing. What's going to be in this mixed use development? What are the tax revenues going to spin off to various municipalities? So there's a lot of issues there that still need to be worked out. But again, the first step is, can the Coyotes even get ownership of this land? And that auction is coming up on the 27th of June.
All right. I'll be watching out for that. Eric Fisher, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Once the NBA wraps up its media rights negotiations sometime this year, the conversation will turn to when is it going to add teams and where those teams are going to be, and the league wants as robust a bidding process as possible. Toward those ends, this year could not have gone better. This past regular season, the NBA sold 22.5 million game tickets for an average attendance of 18,322. Both of those were the league's highest figures ever. They also had 872 sellouts, meaning that more than 70% of NBA regular season games had full attendance. New teams will mean that each existing organization gets a thinner slice of the league's national media deals, and so the bigger those deals are, the more the league can demand in expansion fees. That fee will likely be at least $3 billion, and it wouldn't be too shocking at this point if the number topped $4 billion. Seattle and Las Vegas are considered the front runners, but the league will explore other options, such as San Diego, Kansas City, or the most populous city in North America, one that presents unique challenges and enormous opportunity, Mexico City. Storm clouds continue to form around Toronto Raptors center Jontay Porter. He was already under investigation for some suspicious incidents in which lots of money was bet on him underperforming during specific games, and he left both of them early due to injury. Now Action Network is reporting that Porter placed millions of dollars in bets through a VIP FanDuel account based in Colorado from 2021 to 2023 when he was in the G League. Sources claim that Porter placed thousands of bets through that account, but that FanDuel did not accept any bets placed on the NBA or college basketball. It's unclear from the reporting if he attempted to make any bets on his own sport. His account ceased activity a few weeks before he was called up to the NBA. Given the investigation against him, all of that looks bad, but none of it is against NBA bylaws as long as he didn't bet on basketball. However, if he is innocent, he's going to have to explain a whole lot of circumstantial evidence that looks incredibly sketchy. Up next, Charlie Davies played for the U.S. men's national soccer team and spent time playing for clubs in the U.S. and Europe. He is now an analyst at CBS's Golazo Network. We talked about the present and future of soccer in the U.S., and he had some interesting predictions about where the two major U.S. leagues, MLS and the USL, are headed. That conversation is coming up next. Very excited to be joined now by former U.S. men's national team player and now an analyst and co-host on the CBS Sports Golazo Network, Charlie Davies. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on. So the Golazo Network just turned 1 year old. What have you learned about America's appetite for soccer in that time?
That people are craving the network to get all of their information, to watch games. I think we... You know, we set the standard high with the Morning Footy Show, which is kind of the cornerstone. You can come every morning, you know, put it on. Don't necessarily have to sit on the couch or sit at the desk and watch the whole time. But when a segment comes on that you care about, your league, your favorite player, we have a pretty comprehensive conversation around that. So I think from that standpoint, I couldn't be more proud to be part of this network as it's trying to grow the game. And you could see that this network cares about the game and the influence that this game has on kids in this country. So when you can sit back and think about that, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you guys weight your coverage when, you know, obviously you're US based and we've got MLS and USL here. Mm-hmm. The global soccer interest is, you know, Premier League with, you know, some amount of La Liga, League One, Bundesliga. How do you, given all of that, how do you kind of weight where you want to go and how much time you spend with the various leagues?
Well, I think every league is respected on the network and especially by us, because I think, you know, going to London, for instance, when we were covering Champions League and the studios over in London, you're getting to see everybody. The people, when I was walking the streets, people were like, "Hey, I know you from Morning Footy." And so which blew my mind is the Europeans are watching the network. I don't know how they have access to it, but it's incredible that they are watching our coverage, and they watch the Champions League coverage over the European pundits that they have in the various networks that are European based. So that's incredible. And I'd say, I think that's what's great is if you fancy the Liga, if you fancy the Bundesliga and not your typical English Premier League, and I only care about the English Premier League, and you care about the Argentine League or the Brazilian League or NWSL or Women's Champions League, we have it all. And I think what's great about us is we care about it all. It's not, hey, Tigres and Monterrey are playing in Liga MX last weekend and we don't care about it. No, we care about it all. So it's pretty impressive that this network has worked out great relationships with other networks, because we don't obviously own the rights to every property, but they're willing to work with us because we have no problem saying you can go to their network to watch the game live, because that's what we're going to do. So we'll promote people to go watch those games on those networks. But I think the most important part of it is being able to share with everyone what's happening in other leagues, because I feel like inevitably all those players are going to be coming stateside at some point, whether it's Club World Cup, whether it's the World Cup, in the next few years. So it's, I think, at the right point for this network to kind of hone in on growing the game, because we're kind of at the forefront of that. And for me personally, what an opportunity and something that I'm really grateful for.
In terms of like, what's been sort of a discovery for you in terms of, you know, maybe a league you didn't know much about, or just the interest in your audience in where you can kind of find gold that is sort of one of the less obvious places?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, one, I'm a student of the game, so I felt pretty confident that I know a lot about various leagues and players. But to be honest, at the depth to which we go, the Bundesliga, I think I've learned a lot about the Bundesliga. And, you know, to cover Bayer Leverkusen this season has been remarkable, right? They're still on an unbeaten run in Europe. The Women's Super League, I wasn't too familiar with that until being involved with the Glazer Network, and Women's Champions League for that matter. So to be diving into that and understanding the different players, and I think that really helped with the Women's World Cup. Then I have a great picture and understanding of the women's game internationally and the expectations and where the U.S. Women's National Team is going. I'd say the South American leagues, especially the Argentine league, thanks to Nico Cantor, who keeps me up to date with Boca Juniors matches. And I catch myself going to his house and just watching games in the Argentine league. I just feel we even cover Saudi Arabia, right? So it's like I'll learn about Al Ittihad and Al Nassr. So literally, you're constantly learning, and for you to be successful in a network like this, one, you have to have an open mind, and two, you have to be willing to work. There, not to say that this happens in other networks or other places, but you can't be complacent here. You're constantly learning. You can't think that you know it all, because you never do. And I think the culture here is built that way.
You know, people would say the center of gravity in soccer is still in Europe, you know, with maybe the Premier League a step or a half step above the other leagues. But, you know, then you've got the other major leagues there. Where does MLS fit into that? In some ways, it feels like it's on its own island, because, you know, there's no promotion relegation. It's kind of its own thing. But obviously, you know, we've got Messi and other stars from overseas here. And I'm wondering if it's kind of entering into that conversation, or if it is just kind of its own thing.
Well, you say it's its own thing, but I'll say it's our thing, right? It's that's what I was built off of. I mean, 1996, first it was the World Cup. I had never seen the game played before professionally until the World Cup, and getting a chance to go to one game, which was mind blowing for me. And career defining, because that's literally how my dream was born. And then getting to watch MLS, that was the first time I got to see a professional league and at my hometown team, the New England Revolution. So MLS is central to me in my heart and my interests. And so, yes, Europe is the best. We're talking about Champions League. That's the best of the best across Europe. And the English Premier League is the best league in Europe, but I think people are you know, attached to MLS just because, you know, we've had some iconic players here, and the league's just getting better. And of course that coincides with David Beckham coming here. Then you had Thierry Henry and Kaká. You have former World Players of the Year. And so Zlatan was a great introduction into MLS when he scored that incredible goal in the LAFC LA Galaxy match. But now you have the world's best player here. And that's only going to make headlines, going to make more people interested. You could see last week at Arrowhead, sold out. Everyone's interested. And then not only that, he performs, right? So Messi isn't just a name and shows up and doesn't score or impact the game. He had an assist and a goal and wows the crowd. And then everyone's like, ah, I get it. And oh, by the way, similar in 94, not too many people knew what was going on or knew the players. They're like, oh, this is a cool event. It's kind of like the Olympics, right? All different countries here and we're coming to celebrate. Then you get the essence of the game, bringing people together and filling stadiums and everyone's happy and the tailgating. And then it opens people's eyes to why this is the world's game. And so for me, what Messi's doing here is only helping the game, growing the game, the interest, bringing people together, getting people to say, oh, you know what? I'm going to come to more Sporting Kansas City games, you know, or I'm going to become an Inter Miami fan because of Messi, right? Whatever it is, it's only helping the game grow. And so MLS is on this, I think, crazy course path to being a really recognizable league in the world where you're competing for some of the top players in the world, because people know when you come to play in the United States, it's a good way of living. So you hear about some of the stories in Saudi Arabia with those players and, you know, going there for a year and not really liking it or adjusting and trying to figure out what's next. Can I go back to the league I was just in, or can I pivot and go to the United States? So I think MLS is in a great spot right now. And it's, I think, only going to drastically improve after the 2026 World Cup. So yes, I think we do a pretty good job of covering MLS because obviously Apple has those rights, but we're never going to not talk about the league here on home soil and how it's grown and how much we all care about it.
Yeah. And I want to get to the World Cup in a sec, but the USL, I'm trying to figure out where they fit into this whole ecosystem, mm-hmm. because if you hear, you know, this European stars coming to the US, you assume they're coming to an MLS team. At the same time, the USL is, you know, trying to make their own mark in the US. They have more teams. They have, you know, a broader reach. Like my local team is the Oakland Roots and now the Oakland Soul.
Oh, that's, they have an incredible kit, by the way.
Yeah. They're awesome. So yeah. How are they kind of in this ecosystem as well?
You know, I think long-term, I'm always thinking what's the ideal goal for USL? And I think I put it in my mind a long time ago that the USL is just trying to continue to strengthen. You know, the stadiums are getting bigger. There's more interest. They cover more ground. There's more teams, right? That inevitably you're going to have some large markets and big teams. And I think it's all setting up down the line for promotion relegation. At some point, I think MLS will acquire USL. When USL is strong enough, they have games on live TV on big networks like CBS, which is incredible, right? The growth of USL and soccer in this country is massive. I think ultimately they will get acquired by MLS.
Yeah, and on that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but the promotion relegation thing, I think, could be a sticking point because the sense I get from MLS is they don't have an appetite for that right now. They want public
Not
money.
Right now.
They want to be able to invest in certain places. Do you think it's coming eventually?
Yeah. Now versus never are, you know, it's two different things. So for me, yeah, it's not now and it's not anytime soon. But the word never, I don't think that's a reality. I think maybe it's 20 years down the line because the USL still has a long way to go. For all the clubs to have sound soccer-specific stadiums at minimum 10,000 capacity. You know, you can't have 60,000 seated stadiums for USL, but I think you don't have to worry about bankruptcy. You don't have to worry, you know, I think the owners, they want to make money at the end of the day, right? And so the MLS has done an incredible job. That's when you have to tip your cap to Don Garber of seeing this league grow. And, you know, from where it was in 1996 to where it is now, it's I don't think too many people would believe it. So I think down the line, eventually, USL will continue to strengthen, continue to develop talent, continue to build fantastic infrastructure and training facilities. But yeah, I think the quality around the game, the stadiums, the training facilities, all of that needs to drastically improve across the board. And then I think at that point, we'll all know it's been like building to that, hey, all right, you know, MLS acquires USL.
Yeah. And before we let you go, World Cup's coming in 2026. What do you think the stakes are for soccer in the U.S. in terms of, you know, how well this could go? Or is there any chance that, like, it doesn't just, like, throw a whole bunch of gasoline on the fire in terms of soccer in the U.S.?
I'm very confident about the talent in this pool that will be on display in 2026. There's a lot of players who got their first taste of a World Cup in 2022, and they were young, unproven at the international stage, and they did relatively well, right? I think they probably played above their expectations. In some cases, you'd say they didn't even deliver. They could have gone a little bit further against the Netherlands. But at the end of the day, I think they're going to continue to grow and develop. And, you know, you look at some of the players who are coming through who could potentially break through on that 2026 team. But yes, I mean, it's really set up for the U.S. to make an incredible run and galvanize the country and you know, light the enthusiasm on fire in this country and maybe have it catch up to some of the bigger sports. I feel like it's touch and go with NHL. Might jump at the MLB at some point in the next 10 years, I feel like. But yeah, I mean, like any World Cup, you just, I don't even want to talk about them not hitting their potential or not doing well, because I don't even want to throw that out there. I'm only thinking positively, and I'm really happy that this group is it's got a lot of potential, a lot of depth, and there's only more players coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. Charlie Davies, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Subscribe if you have not already and leave us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.